into the sky. All along the wall, Volant's honour guard drove their steeds from the fortress, gliding out into the darkness, pennants snapping. The skeleton mounts looped in formation, like a single mountainous serpent, then dived, plunging towards the wind and the battle at the gatehouse. Auron shook his head, awed by the sight. Then he stood up straight, dusted down his armour, and began marching through the lines of knights. His initial shock was fading. Nothing had changed. They were prepared for this. "Ready the ballistae!" he cried, waving his scythe at the towers that punctuated the walls. War machines rumbled into view, huge iron bolt throwers decorated with wings of bone designed to resemble the moths that circled constantly overhead. "Load the barrels!" he called, and huge smoking vats of oil were ratcheted up into place on the walls. "Archers, take aim!" Hundreds of bowmen rushed past the knights and readied their weapons, targeting the crowds surging towards the walls. Auron was ashamed of how he had hesitated at the sight of the Mordants. The Morn Prince had taken to the air with bravery and determination, despite the fact that he had never intended to make his stand here. None of this was as Volant had intended, but he had rallied the men with as much confidence as if this had been planned months ago. Auron resolved to do the same. As he strode back and forth, howling his orders, his determination grew. The unburied could not be moved, but neither would they be abandoned. Korsos stumbled after him, gripping his bone staff. He had just opened his mouth to say something when he halted and peered out into the darkness. The battle at the gatehouse was raging, a clamour echoing across the eventide, but Korsos frowned and put a hand to his ear.
"What is that?"
he cried. Auron paused to listen.
"What?"
All he could hear was the din of battle and the sound of the bells ringing behind him. Korsos held up a finger to silence him, still listening intently. Then Auron heard it, a thin, ululating shriek. "What is that?" he muttered. A captain rushed over to him, asking for clarity on his orders. Auron answered his question, and by the time the captain had gone, the shriek was much clearer. It was quickly getting louder, and something about it caused Auron's blood to cool. It was like dozens of tormented voices screaming in concert. He shrugged and tried to ignore the sound, as he saw that the Mordants, not attacking the gatehouse, had now reached the foot of the fortress walls and were starting to climb up its twisting claw-like buttresses.
"On my order!"
he cried to the archers. The Mordants moved with unbelievable speed, scrambling up the walls like spiders bursting from an egg, swarming towards them with no need of ropes or hooks. The sight of them filled Auron with revulsion. They were beings without souls, men without minds, vessels for a grotesque hunger and nothing else. He held his hatred in check, keeping his hand raised until he was sure they would be easy targets. Then he swept his hand down and launched hell. A storm of arrows sliced into the Mordants, tearing through their sagging flesh and ripping them away from the walls. Dozens tumbled back through the air, trailing arcs of blood and crashing into the mob below. As the archers loosed wave after wave of arrows, the screaming sound grew so loud that some of them started to miss their marks, wincing and cursing as they shot.
"There!"
said Korsos, pointing into the distance. A shape was rushing through the clouds towards the fortress, a grotesque parody of the prince's skeleton steed. Rather than an elegant serpent of gleaming bones, it was an ugly, snub-faced thing, with ragged, fleshy wings and scraps of intestine trailing from its butchered chest. It looked like the carcass of an enormous bat, and its mouth was open, revealing long, cruel incisors and filling the air with that hideous shriek. As the sound grew in volume, Auron's head started to pound, and he became gripped by an overwhelming sense of dread. His heart hammered in his chest, and his hands began to shake.
"A Terrorgeist!"
gasped Korsos. Auron shook his head, trying to escape the sound.
"A what?" "It will send us mad!"
cried Korsos, covering his ears.
"The sound will send us mad!"
Auron looked across the wall and saw that some of the archers had staggered away from the battlements, shaking their heads and dropping their longbows. Even the lines of graveswords standing behind them were lowering their scythes, gripping their heads and cursing.
"Block your ears!"
shouted Auron. He grabbed some dust from the ground, spat in it, and jammed it in his ears, waving for his men to do the same.
"Block out the noise!"
All along the wall, knights and soldiers dropped to their knees, seizing fistfuls of dirt and trying to cram it into their ears. The dust lessened the sound for a moment, but as the Terrorgeist hurtled towards the walls, the noise became unbearable.
"Fire the ballistae!"
cried Auron. And the men in the towers struggled to comply, triggering their war machines as best they could while reeling from the sound. The bolts went wide, whistling off into the clouds as the Terrorgeist crashed into the battlements, hurling bone and masonry in every direction as it waded onto the top of the wall, screaming furiously at the soldiers scrambling for cover. The monster was huge, 30 or 40 feet long, with enormous leathery wings that thrashed violently as it tried to find a steady perch on the wall. With the archers scattering, the Gravesward rushed towards the creature, raising their scythes to attack. The monster hit them with a scream like a body blow, causing them to stumble and stagger. Most of them failed to land a blow, and those that did only hacked through flaps of dead, ragged skin. The Terrorgeist's head lunged forwards and ripped through the knights. Auron stumbled through the carnage, dodging around staggering knights in his attempt to reach the monster. This close, the scream was horrific. It felt like his head was being split open, and he struggled to see clearly. His eyes were so full of tears. There was also a nauseating smell pouring from the monster's heaving carcass. Several of the knights near Auron were doubled over, gagging on the fetid stink. He reached the creature and landed a blow, slamming his scythe into its chest. The blade cut easily through the exposed ribs, but the wound had no effect. The Terrorgeist did not even seem to notice him as it dropped a fresh corpse from its mouth and waded into the crush of archers and knights, locking its jaws around another man and ripping him in two. Auron tried to attack again, but before he could, the monster reared back and let out its loudest screech yet. Auron fell to his knees, deafened and in so much pain that he could not see. Other knights collapsed all around him, helpless to defend themselves, as the monster lurched forwards, ripping and tearing, filling the air with blood and howls. The scream grew until Auron curled into a fetal position, his muscles locked with cramp and his breath caught in his chest. His lungs burned, and his oxygen-starved brain began to withdraw into itself. The cries of his men and the scream of the Terrorgeist faded, becoming distant and vague, as though he were remembering his death rather than experiencing it. Light burned into Auron's mind, and he mouthed a prayer, preparing to meet his ancestors. Then he realized that as the light grew, the Terrorgeist's scream was faltering. His vision was also returning. He saw that the light was not in his mind, but burning through the walls of the fortress. It was the amethyst fire of the unburied. His muscles loosened enough for him to breathe, and he managed to sit up and look around. All across the wall, men were struggling to rise as the scream dropped away, but rather than attacking, they were staring up in shock. The Morn Prince was circling overhead. He still had his scythe raised, and he had been transformed by the unburied. Their fire had leapt from the walls of the fortress and ignited his armour. He was burning with the power of the ancestors. Prince Volant lashed out with his scythe, and purple light ripped through the air, slamming into the Terrorgeist's face. The monster fell backwards, pounding its wings, trying to right itself, as amethyst fire drummed into its flesh, engulfing it in sparks and smoke. The Terrorgeist launched itself from the wall and locked its jaws on the neck of Volant's steed. The winged Goliaths looped and dived, screaming and roaring as they tore at each other.
"The walls!"
cried Auron, as dozens of figures poured over the battlements. He cursed when he realized that whatever happened to the Terrorgeist now, it had done its job. While it kept his men occupied, the Mordants had scaled the walls and were now pouring into the fortress. He rallied the knights nearest to him and led a charge, howling as he cut down the first Mordant to reach him. It was frenzied and desperate. The Mordants clawed at the knights like animals, and there were so many of them, flooding onto the walls with a roar of snarls and grunts. Auron staggered backwards, swiping, hacking, and slipping on blood. The knights around him fought with the same furious, silent determination, and managed to hold their ground until a massive shape crashed down beside them, sending a violent tremor through the walls and causing everyone to stagger. Auron dragged himself clear of the scrum, up onto the battlements, and saw that the two winged monsters had crashed to the ground. Volant slammed onto the wall and rolled away as his steed collapsed and fell in the other direction. The Terrorgeist leant back and opened its bloody jaws, preparing to scream again. But Volant's armour was still ablaze with the power of his ancestors, and he hurled it from his scythe. The Terrorgeist's head jolted back, and as it tried to shake away the flames, Prince Volant dived across the wall and sank the full length of his curved blade into the monster's skull. The creature jolted upwards, trying to fling the prince away, but he gripped the haft of his scythe and yanked it down, splitting its head in two. Archers and Gravesward cheered as the Terrorgeist crashed to the ground, juddered, then lay still. The Morn Prince turned to face his men, light still shining from his black armour. He held his scythe aloft, trailing strands of blood from the blade, and his men howled even louder.
"The unburied are with us!" cried Prince Volant. "Now and forever! And when this battle is—"
His words became a pained cough, and he stumbled forwards. Then he dropped to his knees, revealing the figure standing behind him. It was a Mordant, and it was gripping a blood-stained shard of iron as long as its arm. It stood over the prince, panting hungrily, about to pounce on him, but dozens of arrows kicked it backwards through the air, sending it hurtling from the battlements.
"To the prince!"
howled Auron, running through the battle and climbing up the Terrorgeist's corpse. Gravesward formed a circle around Volant, holding back waves of Mordants. As the flesh-eaters continued tumbling onto the wall in great crowds, swamping the fortress's defenders, Lord Auron dropped to Prince Volant's side and grabbed his bloody armour. At first he thought the prince was dead, but then Volant coughed, spraying blood through the mouth-grill of his helmet. He managed to sit up and grab Auron's arm.
"We've lost the gatehouse. Can you hold the wall?"
Auron nodded, then glanced around.
"No,"
he admitted. He was determined to show the same fortitude as the prince, but he could not deny what he was seeing. Thanks to the Terrorgeist, the Mordants were flowing freely over the battlements. As well as the ones climbing over the embrasures, there were some with wings, like smaller versions of the Terrorgeist's mighty pinions. There was no way to use the oil or war machines.
"The walls are lost!"
He thought the prince would be outraged, but he simply nodded, pulling Auron closer.
"Get your men to the unburied. I need time to think."
He coughed and stiffened in pain, then grabbed Auron again, his voice growing more steady.
"Fight every inch of the way."
Chapter 13. The Victory Feast.
"What happened to us?" asked Queen Nia.
She was seated at King Galen's side, at the head of the feast.
Lords Maiak and Melvas looked up at her words, but Galen knew she was talking to him.
The war had ignited something in her soul. Her tiredness was gone, her bitterness forgotten. She looked wonderful, 20 years younger and flushed with pride. The firelight flashed in her glistening eyes, and he realized he could not remember the last time she had looked at him with such passion and focus. He reached out and took her hand.
"What do you mean?"
She nodded at the great hall. They were surrounded by victorious warriors, vassals and kinsmen, their faces ruddy from wine and the heat of the fire, their eyes burning with pride as they leant back in their chairs or danced through the smoke.
"How did we forget this?" she said. "How did we forget how to live?"
Galen laughed and drank more of his wine.
"It is not our place to choose the why and the when. The great wolf chose this moment to rouse his pack. We must just be grateful that he remembered us. He is behind everything. This rebellion would not have come as a surprise to him. I believe he sent us these traitors as a test, a final chance to prove our strength and loyalty."
She smiled, squeezing his hand so hard it hurt.
"I love you."
Galen raised her hand to his lips and kissed her fingers.
"I saw you at the gates, my love," So brave. So beautiful. You look like a goddess. Like Natona reborn.
She blushed and looked away, then raised her chin and looked proudly down the table, the very image of a noble regent. For years she had hidden in her chambers, nursing a hurt he could not ease, the agony of not giving him an heir. But now she looked as though she had rid herself of a terrible weight, no longer hunched, no longer bowed. The lines on her face no longer looked like the cruel wounds of time, but badges of honour. Galen turned to the warrior seated at his other side, Lord Melvas.
"What news from Lord Curac?"
Melvas was drowsy with exhaustion and drink, and his gaze was fixed on the dancers and musicians at the far end of the table. He sat up and rubbed his face, struggling to focus on his king. Galen laughed.
"No one celebrates as well as you, my old friend."
Melvas gave him a rueful grin.
"I have waited until tonight, King Galen. We will be on the road for 2 days or more after this. I will have plenty of time to recover before you reach the capital."
"Then Curac has won?"
Melvas grinned.
"Very nearly. It took less than a day to reach the northernmost castle. He's attacking it as we speak. If the traitors refuse to surrender, Curac will take their heads just as easily as those of all the others."
"Then he has no need of our aid?"
"No, Your Majesty."
Melvas emptied his goblet and poured himself another glass of wine.
"We are free to enjoy the fruits of our labours, and then in the morning we can set off for the capital."
King Galen closed his eyes, picturing the scene. Once the hounds of Dinan had captured the capital, the whole kingdom would be his once more. The sign of the wolf would fly from every castle in the land, and the bards would sing of the day King Galen and Queen Nia crushed the rebels who had turned their backs on 1,000 years of tradition and fealty. He sensed Melvas watching him.
"I can't eat with you staring at my ear," laughed the king. "Speak your mind. What are you worried about now?"
"Curac could join us within a few days, Your Majesty."
Galen shook his head.
"Not this again."
On another night, his general's doubt might have annoyed him, but he was in such good spirits that he smiled.
"Speed is everything, Melvas. I've told you this from the day we left Ruad. The rebels are a disorganized rabble, but if we give them time to join together against us, this war could become a tedious slog. I will not end my days locked in some drawn-out tussle over a backwater I had forgotten the name of until a few weeks ago. We move fast. We take their heads before they have time to get them together and form an alliance. We don't need the extra numbers from Curac."
He nodded at the meat heaped on Melvas's plate.
"You're just getting too comfortable here. You want to spend a few more days stuffing your gut."
Melvas was about to protest, but Galen held up a hand to silence him.
"I'm joking. You're a good man, Melvas. Would I let you lead the hounds if you weren't?"
He shook his head.
"But I won't wait here for Curac. I needed him to take the north so that we wouldn't have an enemy at our backs. But you tell me he's dealing with that. So we will set off for the capital tomorrow. If Curac is as good as you claim, he will join us quickly enough to see me plant the false king's head on the battlements."
Melvas seemed about to argue again, when Queen Nia laughed at him.
"Know when you're beaten, Melvas. We'll leave in the morning."
The warrior held up his hands and smiled.
"I'm not fool enough to argue with both of you."
He rose slowly to his feet, holding the back of his chair to steady himself.
"So I will dance."
He bowed, almost falling in the process, then stumbled down the length of the table towards the dance at the far end. As he went, warriors reached out, grabbing his hand and patting him on the back, roaring his name. Galen was still smiling as he turned to Nia.
"Are we going to let that rogue have all the fun?"
She looked shocked.
"You haven't asked me to dance since..."
She frowned.
"Have you ever asked me to dance?"
He shook his head in mock outrage, then stood and bowed to her.
"Queen Nia, heroine of Sarum Keep,
Will you consent to dance with me?
She raised an eyebrow.
Will your back hold out?
He laughed as he took her hand and crossed the hall. People backed away, forming an impromptu processional, bowing, smiling, and raising their drinks. As their regents approached, the musicians struck up a new tune, playing faster and louder, and Nia laughed as Galen whirled her into the dance. Faces blurred as the king turned at pace, lifting his queen off her feet and crushing her to his chest. Colour and sound blazed in his mind, ignited by the wine and his quickening heart. Some of the dancers were swinging red ribbons, and as he spun, King Galen found himself surrounded by a spiral of crimson strands. Chapter 14. The Barren Points. The road headed south for a mile before it started to bend west and climb towards the stars. Gotrek walked just a few paces from the edge, staring out into the void and shaking his head.
"What do you call these roads again?"
he asked, looking back at Lucia.
"These are the wines," she replied. "This is the Great South Wind, one of the largest highways in the Princedom. From here we will pass the Sceptred Wind and the Wind of Foreknowing. Beyond that we will reach the Barren Points, home of Lord Auron, Warden of the Northern Climes. There we shall find Prince Volant."
Gotrek nodded and looked back out from the road.
"How are these things suspended? Sorcery?"
"The wines are the veins of the princedom. They are hung from the prominence." "The prominence are your fortresses?"
asked Malaneth, studying the few lights that still shone on the horizon. Locia nodded.
"And our temples and homes. The greatest of them are vast. There are thousands of people in a fortress like the Barren Points or the Lingering Keep. There are many kinds of..."
She cut off mid-sentence and stared up at the empty tracts of ocean.
"The Lingering Keep?"
asked Malaneth.
"Morbium's capital," said Locia, her voice flat. "Home of Prince Volant, and home to the amethyst princes since the dawn of time."
Gotrek was still gazing out at the lonely lights of the temples.
"So the roads are hung from your cities, but what keeps the cities afloat?"
"The unburied," said Locia, touching the cocoon she carried. "We preserve our ancestors, and they in turn loan us their immortal power, feeding life into the prominence. Or at least that's how it has always been until now."
They trudged on in silence for a while, the only sound coming from Trakos's twisted boot as he dragged it along behind him. After walking for a few hours, his limp had become even more pronounced. Malaneth imagined he would like to rest, but was too proud to ask. The thought of his stoical, grimacing silence made the journey slightly more entertaining. Every dozen yards or so, they passed another corpse, either a dismembered ghoul, one of the knights in a flamboyant feathered cloak, or one of Morbium's civilians, pale, emaciated wretches like Lucia, dressed in white or dark purple robes. Every one of the corpses was surrounded by a mobile shroud of tiny moths that scattered when Malaneth and the others approached, filling the darkness with movement and noise. It took a few minutes for Malaneth to realise that one of the bodies up ahead was still moving, trying to fend off the moths.
"Gotrek," she said,
nodding towards the struggling shape. He nodded and veered back into the centre of the road, slinging his axe from his back as he reached the man. When the slayer hauled the terrified wretch to his feet, Malaneth recognised his face.
"The gatekeeper,"
she laughed.
"You didn't get far."
"Traitor!"
cried Lucia, barging past Malaneth to confront him.
"How dare you abandon your post? If you had done your duty, the Mordants could have been halted. How could you hide yourself away while the Gravesward fought for their lives?"
The man tried to pull away from her, shaking his head, but he was trapped firmly in Gotrek's iron grip.
"High Priestess, forgive me!"
His voice was shrill.
"What could I do?"
"What you were trained to do,"
Lucia exclaimed.
"What you were sworn to do."
Her voice was taut with rage. Malaneth sensed that she was venting all the grief and rage that had been tormenting her since she had left the port. She drew her scythe and brandished it at the quaking man.
"Your cowardice will have risked countless souls. I should execute you for your... They came so fast,"
said the gatekeeper, shaking his head.
"There was no time to lock the gates or raise the wind. Even the Gravesward could not hold them back.
His eyes flicked towards Lucia.
I've never seen so many Mordants. Where are they coming from? Why are the prominents growing dark?
The Iron Shroud has been breached, said Lucia, not looking at the man. Something has broken through the power of the Unburied. We have been revealed to the rest of the princedoms.
The gatekeeper looked like he might be sick. He shook his head and muttered something to himself.
Your head is somewhere, he said. Where?
Prince Volant is at the Barren Points, and I have promised to take this Duardin to him.
The man stepped away from Gotrek, staring at him in confusion, taking in the chest rune and the streaks of gold in his beard and mohawk. Then he turned towards Malineth. Her leathers were drenched in gore, and her hair was clotted with blood, sticking up from her head at a deranged angle. She gave him a friendly wink.
"Take me with you, priestess,"
he gasped, looking back at Lucia.
"Don't leave me with these—"
Malineth wondered whether he was more afraid of her or the ghouls. Lucia did not meet his eye, but nodded.
"Only if you can keep up,"
said Gotrek, and marched off down the road. As the road climbed higher, they saw other highways passing beneath them, crisscrossing the sea, made of the same amalgamation of bone and iron. After a few hours, lights began to wash over the metal, coming from up ahead.
"Is this it?"
asked Malineth, peering at the distant shape.
"Is this the fortress where we will find your prince?"
Lucia nodded. Malineth looked again at the shape in the distance, frowning as they walked towards it.
"Did you say the lights come from the—"
She hesitated, gesturing at the cocoon Lucia carried.
"From those things?"
Again Lucia nodded.
"The Unburied. And did you say that your prince took all the Unburied back to your capital, so that they would be safe from the flesh-eaters?"
Lucia hesitated, staring at the lights.
"It would appear he's overlooked some," said Malineth.
The priestess strode on, gripping her scythe and picking up her pace.
"Finally," grunted Gotrek, jogging after her. "Someone with a sense of urgency."
The Barren Points were nothing like the fortress they had seen at the port. Rather than a shell-like spiral curve, it resembled an overgrown version of the shrine where they had first met Lucia, a gnarled, briar-like tangle of bone towers, each knotted around the others to make an impenetrable tangle. The whole tormented mass reached up like flames, as large as a city and as strange as everything else they had seen in the princedom. Somewhere deep inside the knotted walls was the source of the purple light, which spilled through the gaps between the towers, landing on the sea in a jumble of rippling shafts.
"Looks as buggered as the last place," said Gotrek.
The far side of the fortress had collapsed, and hundreds of fires littered the ruined walls. There were figures battling through the fumes, silhouetted by the flames. Even from half a mile away, it was clear that most of the figures were ghouls. They were breaching the walls in a way that no sane warrior would attempt, swarming over the defences like rats, scrabbling over each other in a frenzy to reach the defenders that had gathered to face them. War engines hurled comet-like missiles, huge spheres of purple flame that exploded on impact, drenching the ghouls in liquid heat and adding to the fires that were spreading quickly through their ranks. But the shots were wild and sporadic. Lucia stared at the carnage.
"If the Barren Points fall, there is nothing to stop them taking the northern wards." "Are they more of your sacred moths?"
asked Malineth, peering at the clouds of tiny shapes that tumbled around the fighting. Lucia frowned in puzzlement, shaking her head.
"We would not see moths from this distance," said Trakos.
He took a carved ivory box from his belt and flicked a clasp on its side. A dozen linked boxes rattled out of it, each one smaller than the previous one, creating a long, square-sided tube. He snapped the clasp back, locking the boxes in place, then held the tube up to his helmet, looking through a lens at the narrow end. He muttered something and handed the spyglass to Malineth. She grimaced as the scene over the walls swam into focus. The flying shapes were ghouls with vast leathery wings, and as the knights reeled away from them, the creatures swooped down and tore them apart.
"No one is leading the defence," she said. "Look, it's mayhem. Where is this prince you've been telling us so much about? Is he the kind of prince that directs his troops from the local hostelry?"
They each took a turn with Trakos's spyglass, but when it came to Gotrek, He held it for a long time, muttering under his breath.
There are thousands of ghouls at the front gates. They're everywhere. I presume the gates on this side will be locked, and I don't fancy our chances of climbing the walls. Any ideas how we get in?
Losia was still staring at the battle on the walls.
Where is the prince? Or Lord Auron? Priestess, said Melaneth, causing her to turn round in surprise. Can you get us in? I can't imagine it will be long before the ghouls take a look at this side of the fortress. Of course, I have my own routes into all of the prominence.
She waved at the approach to the gates, where several smaller paths snaked away from the main one, then started to hurry on along the road.
Quickly.
As they neared the fortress walls, they heard the sound of winged ghouls whirling overhead in the darkness. Some of them were making a thin, scraping, gasping sound. It was like a knife being dragged across porcelain. Malineth would have found the noise easier to cope with if Trakos hadn't tried to drown it out with another grating hymn. He tried to look proud and triumphant as he marched on, but his wounds made him more tragic than fearsome.
Think how easy it would be to lace one of your knives and jam it through those splits in his armour, whispered her mistress.
I serve the God King, she muttered. I serve something bigger than myself. You wouldn't understand what that's like.
You were meant to serve me. You serve yourself before any god, and you need Gotrek dead if you're going to claim the rune for yourself. How else can you guarantee that he won't end up marching back into Azir with it?
Look at him. He's half dead already. I just need to bide my time, and he'll do the job for me. That way I'll get the rune without breaking the oaths I swore in Azerheim. The Order of Azir won't last long if we murder each other every time there's a chance of glory.
You're getting soft in your old age. You care about him.
Malineth laughed.
I haven't changed that much.
This way, said Losia, leading them down a side road that followed the curve of the fortress walls, heading down as it went. Malineth glanced up. This close, the fortress looked even stranger, like a forest of heat-warped bones.
Look out!
Cried the gatekeeper, as a ghoul dived at them from its perch on the wall. Malineth cursed. The thing was huge, like the ghouls they had faced at the port. Gotrek ran at the wall of the fortress with such speed that he managed to take a few steps up its sheer side and hurl himself into the air. The ghoul screamed in confusion as the full weight of the slayer hit its back. It struggled furiously, forcing everyone to back away, blinded by clouds of dust. But Gotrek was still laughing as he struggled to keep his footing on the monster. He reached down, grabbed its chin, and snapped its neck. Malineth ducked as another ghoul attacked, but she was too slow, and a fist slammed into the side of her head. She stumbled like a drunk, swerving across the road. Then her breath exploded from her lungs as she tripped over rubble and thudded to the ground. She was vaguely aware of a figure standing over her, fending off the ghouls. But she did not realize who it was until she heard Trakos's voice booming out.
Malice born and fiery-eyed, godly lightning in my hand, turning back the darksome tide from Sigmar's golden starlit land.
As the dust cleared, she saw him battling for her life, chin high and voice raised in triumph. He whirled his hammers back and forth, ignoring his wounds and his pain, smashing down every ghoul that scrambled towards her, punching Sigmarite into their deranged faces. There was something horribly desperate in his words. It did not stem from fear of the ghouls, she realized, but fear of his own state of mind. With a few of the ghouls down, the screams were more bearable, and Malineth managed to stand, staring at Trakos as he staggered away from her, dragging his ruined leg and looking for another target.
"You're such a dunce," she said. "Why are you protecting me? Without me around, you'd have a chance of getting that rune."
"I will protect you with whatever strength Sigmar spares me, Malineth Witchblade, servant of the God King."
She rolled her eyes.
"So brave." "This way!" cried Losia,
dashing under an archway and continuing on down the road. Malineth ran after her, and Trakos followed as quickly as he could. But Gotrek stayed in the centre of the road, roaring at the horrors above. Some were clambering over the walls, and others were pounding torn, rotten wings as they circled overhead. Deranged as they were, the ghouls appeared reluctant to go anywhere near a raging slayer.
"Get down here!"
he cried.
"Or on my oath, I'll sprout wings and come up there after you." "Gotchek!"
shouted Malineth, waving her knives at the archway.
"The prince! He's in the fortress, remember?"
Gotrek grunted, gave the ghouls one last glare, then stamped through the carnage towards the arch, shrugging gore from his massive shoulders. The road followed the curve of the wall, and after a few minutes the clamour of battle began to fade. They passed through a low arch. Losia unlocked a small hidden door, and they entered the fortress, emerging onto a wide paved area, surrounded by windows and doors, all of which had been shuttered and barred. They could hear battle all around them, but there was no sign of soldiers or ghouls. The place seemed to have been overlooked as the fighting raged all around it. The glow they had seen outside the fortress was brighter here, and the buildings looked like shards of alabaster held before a fire, pale and shimmering with amethyst light. Losia looked furious as she studied the lights.
"The unburied should be safely in the capital by now. I explained to the prince. We didn't need to lose a single soul as long as he took them to the lingering keep."
She waved her scythe at the lights.
"And here they are, still at risk, surrounded by mordants."
"Where is he, lass?"
said Gotrek, wiping blood from his face as he trudged into the square. She shook her head and gestured them on, across the square. She led them to a narrow lane that looped up behind one of the buildings, lined with dozens of market stalls. As they neared the top of the steep road, the sounds of fighting grew louder. They readied their weapons as they crested the hill, and saw another square spread out below them. A brutal clash was in full swing. Gravesward, black-armoured archers and white-robed priests were all backing slowly into the square as mordants tumbled from every wall and roof. The ghouls were in such a frenzy that they were killing themselves to reach the defenders, leaping from rooftops and smashing themselves across the flagstones, or else being crushed by the weight of bodies. The scene was dominated by an enormous fossilised serpent that towered over the soldiers, its bleached bone wings rattling as it lashed at the ghouls, flinging them through the air. The Erebid numbered no more than a couple of hundred, but every building was carpeted with frenzied ghouls, and more were looping overhead, pounding their wings as they looked for a place to attack. Malineth guessed that in the streets around the square alone there must have been thousands of the creatures, all thrashing wildly as they tried to reach the scythe-wielding knights. The Erebid had formed a tight circle around one of their fallen comrades. Malineth struggled to see the wounded warrior they were so desperate to protect, but he looked to be unconscious, slumped in the arms of another knight. It was a desperate scene. The Erebid were massively outnumbered, and most of them were bleeding from multiple wounds. As they backed into the square, mordants rushed towards them from every direction, spilling out of streets and windows in a flood of grey, mottled flesh.
"This is not a fight we can win,"
said Malineth, searching around for a place to take cover.
"We need to think carefully about how we—"
"Who's the prince?"
bellowed Gotrek, swinging his axe cheerfully as he strode out into the square. Chapter 15. The Hidden City. Most of the Gravesward were too busy fighting to register Gotrek's question, but some looked round in surprise at the sight of a slayer storming towards them. Malineth cursed and ran after Gotrek, with Trakos and Losia following close behind. The gatekeeper took his chance to flee, sprinting off up a side street. Ghouls dashed at Gotrek as he broke from the shadows, but he hacked them down without breaking his stride.
"Halt!"
cried out one of the knights, breaking from the fight to level a scythe at Gotrek.
"Who are you?"
The skeletal drake reared up behind him, a furious edifice of bone, locking its empty eye sockets on the slayer.
"I could ask the same of you,"
replied Gotrek, glaring at the knight, clearly unimpressed by the massive beast looming over him. Malineth muttered another curse.
"You're clearly not the defenders of this fort," continued the slayer, "or you'd be up in the walls instead of hiding down here."
Malineth had to step aside as a ghoul broke from the scrum and leapt at her, its face rigid with bloodlust. She opened its throat and booted it into another of the creatures, then bounded over the first one and hammered a knife into both their faces. She flipped clear and landed at Gotrek's side. Her pulse was hammering, willing her to abandon herself to the slaughter, but she held her bloodlust at bay. A knight pushed through the crush, trying to reach Gotrek. It was the warrior carrying the fallen knight.
"Who are you?"
he called, struggling under the weight of his burden.
"Where's your prince?"
shouted Gotrek, punching a ghoul to the ground and slamming his axe through its neck.
"Well, anyone got a tongue in their head? Take their weapons,"
said the knight. His armour was more ornate than the others, engraved and filigreed and studded with white gemstones. The slayer rumbled with laughter, gripping his axe in boulder-sized fists and dropping into a battle stance.
"Hee-hee, just you bloody try!"
The knights hesitated, thrown by Gotrek's psychotic grin. The slayer shrugged, swapping the axe from hand to hand.
"Not much of a weapon, to be fair."
He tapped it against his chest rune with a clang.
"I got it from the same mewling runts who made this. But it'll do for the likes of you."
The knights staggered backwards as ghouls continued to pour from the surrounding streets. Trakos limped past them, pummeling ghouls and singing.
"Wait!"
cried the knight in the ornate armour.
"Lucia?"
He pushed towards her, still dragging the fallen warrior, but then hesitated when he got within arm's reach of Gotrek.
"Lord Oren,"
said Lucia, rushing past Gotrek and embracing the knight. He smiled, clearly shocked.
"Prince Volant,"
said Oren, looking down at the man in his arms.
"It's the High Priestess."
"You're the Morn Prince,"
cried Gotrek, striding towards the prone knight. There was a loud clatter as the Gravesward locked ranks, raising shields and readying scythes.
"Wait!"
Lucia raised a hand.
"The Duardin is not an enemy. I would not have reached you without his help. He killed countless Mordens to get me here."
The prince managed to raise himself up and look at Gotrek. It was only then that Malineth realized how big he was, almost twice as tall as her, larger than Trakos even. His armor was filthy and damaged, but he was unmistakably the leader. His face was hidden inside a tall black-and-white helmet that displayed a snarling face on one side and a serene smile on the other.
"Your Majesty,"
said Lucia, backing away.
"Who are you, Duardin?"
gasped the huge knight, ignoring Lucia. His voice was rough with pain, and there was blood pooling beneath him.
"Why do you fight for Morbium?"
The ghouls surged forwards again, and there was a flurry of blows as the knight struggled to hold them back.
"I'm Gotrek Gurnison,"
bellowed the slayer over the din.
"And I fight exclusively for Gotrek Gurnison."
He hacked down a pair of ghouls with one savage swipe.
"I'm here because I've been told you can get me to Nagash."
"Nagash?"
Prince Volant turned to Lucia, shaking his head. He had to pause as more ghouls broke through the lines of knights. There was a furious flurry of scythes, and then, when there was another gap in the fighting, Volant stared at Gotrek.
"No sane person wants to reach the great necromancer."
Gotrek laughed.
"Sane?"
He waved his bloody axe at Lucia, still holding the cocooned corpse she had taken from the docks.
"You live in bones and worship moths!"
Prince Volant looked past Gotrek towards Malineth, but before he could say anything, the ground juddered, and the sounds of distant battle swelled in volume. A low, booming explosion echoed down the streets.
"Grungni,"
muttered Gotrek, as a shadow loomed over the city. It looked like a column of smoke pluming from a volcano.
"What is that?"
said Malineth, as the shape moved into the light.
"A mordant,"
said Prince Volant, his tone bleak. The ghoul looked similar to the others, apart from its size. It was a colossus, hundreds of feet tall and teeming with legions of smaller ghouls. It smashed an enormous fist down into the battlements, destroying the rows of explosive charges lined up for the ballistae. Flames blossomed through the walls, lighting up the giant's grotesque face. It was just as hunched and sinewy as its smaller kin, but there was a gleam of cruel intelligence in its eyes, quite different from all the others. It dragged its fist sideways through the battlements, hurling men and war machines through the air and creating another drumroll of explosions.
"To the separating chambers,"
snapped Volant, turning towards Lord Oren.
"Protect the unburied."
Oren nodded and ordered his men back across the square. They were completely surrounded, and it was slow going, but the knights fought with impressive discipline, carving a path through the frantic crowds. The fury of the fighting made more conversation impossible, so Gotrek, Malineth and Trakos fought alongside the knights in silence as they made for a building on the far side of the square. It was a huge undulating structure, built in an architectural style unlike anything Malineth had seen before. It looked like a marquee of white silk, frozen at the moment its peaks were caught in a breeze, all ripples and bulges, but it was made of the same hard, bone-like material as the rest of the fortress.
"Into the hidden city!"
shouted Auron, waving for everyone to follow him as he dragged the prince up the steps with the help of some of his men. As most of the knights formed a semicircle at the bottom of the steps, raising their shields, Auron unlocked the door, flinging it open and spilling purple light over the battle. They hurried inside, hurling ghouls back down the steps as they backed into the hall. There was a fierce scrum at the threshold before the knights managed to shut the doors with a resounding slam.
"Bar them!"
cried Lord Auron, leaving the prince on the floor and rushing back to the doors. They were vast, imposing things, wrought of iron-threaded bone, with thick crossbars mounted on either side. As Auron waved his men back and forth, they slammed the bars down. When each bar landed, it triggered a mechanism that whirred like an enormous timepiece, turning and interlocking and creating a lattice of bolts. The sound of the mechanism seemed to draw Trakos out of his habitual daydream, and he wandered over to them, fingering the locks with interest.
"What is this place?"
asked Malenith, looking up at the distant vaulted ceiling. There were 12 cocoons, identical to the one Losia was carrying.
"Who are you?"
demanded Prince Voland, still sprawled on the floor and clutching his wounds. His skeleton steed was circling him protectively, its hollow gaze locked on Gotrek and Malenith.
"I serve the Order of Azir."
Malenith nodded at Trakos, who was still studying the locks.
"We're escorting the Slayer through the princedoms."
"You serve Sigma?"
The prince waved at Gotrek, who was stomping around the hall, staring up at the ceiling.
"He doesn't. Why are you helping him?"
Malenith spoke up quickly, before Trakos could tell the entire crowd about the rune.
"He's unusually powerful, and he's an enemy of the Chaos Gods."
"Any gods?"
clarified Gotrek. He walked over to the prince.
"Get me to Nagash, and I'll demonstrate."
The prince removed his helmet and studied Gotrek. Like the rest of the Erebid, Volant's head was pale and hairless, but unlike the others, his face was inked with a complex spiral of tattoos, slender black lines that coiled down from his eyes, mimicking the markings of a moth's wings. His long, angular face was unmistakably regal, but it was twisted by pain. He gasped as he climbed to his feet, towering over everyone present. He stooped and tapped Gotrek's rune with a long, tapered finger.
"And this?"
Malenith struggled to hold back a curse, wondering if there was anyone in the mortal realms who wouldn't immediately pick up on the rune's importance. Gotrek laughed bitterly.
"The reason for my sudden popularity."
Prince Volant waited patiently for him to elaborate. The Slayer shrugged.
"Just a rune, and a bloody ugly one at that. Can you get me to Nagash?" "Why would I help you?"
Gotrek made a low growling sound, but before he could respond, Losia strode across the room and addressed the prince, her face rigid with anger.
"We've come from the Amset stocks. The unburied were left to the Mordants."
Her voice trembled as she waved at the cocoons hanging overhead.
"As they have been here. You swore that you would get the ancestors back to the capital, Prince Volant."
"You swore the Iron Shroud would hold long enough for me to do so."
The prince's nonchalant mask slipped, and his eyes flashed.
"Do you think you're the only one who cares for the safety of the ancestors?"
He pointed to Tauron.
"I sent an order for the unburied to be moved months ago, and when I arrived only hours ahead of destruction, I find Lord Auron doing nothing."
"Nothing?"
Lord Auron looked outraged.
"We can't move the unburied High Priestess,"
he said, addressing Losia.
"I have explained all this to the Morn Prince. We stayed here to defend them because it's either that or abandon them. They're bound into the workings of the fortress. They're part of the old Duardin engines. It would take months to separate them from the architecture. Years, maybe."
Losia shook her head, looking up at the cogs and wheels fixed into the ceiling.
"The unburied are trapped."
Auron nodded.
"The forefathers completed their work here."
He tapped the haft of his scythe on the cobbles.
"This was the final promenade to be completed. They sealed it with the souls of the unburied and then sailed back to the lingering keep. The unburied are bound by mechanisms too complex to understand. And even if we could understand them, we don't know how the Caradhron powered these machines. And there's no way I could have broken the ancestors out before the Mordants arrived."
Malenith shook her head.
"Did you say sailed? How could anyone sail in this place? Your sea isn't liquid. It looks like it's made of lead." "It's impossible to cross the Eventide now,"
said Auron. Even touching it means madness and death. But our forefathers crossed it regularly. They had to. There were no wines until they built them. They borrowed engineering skills from the Caradhron. They brought the unburied here in great engines that were able to cross the Eventide. Gotrek's eye glazed over. Malyneth had seen this happen before. It tended to precede either sleep, an idea, or an explosion of extreme violence. It was worryingly hard to predict which.
Right, said the Slayer, looking up at the Morn Prince. I have business with a god.
He waved his axe at the moth-shrouded shapes hanging overhead.
How about this? I get your corpse eggs back to your capital, and you tell me how to reach Nagash.
Lord Auron laughed incredulously, and the prince simply stared.
Well?
Demanded Gotrek, as something heavy boomed against the doors.
My guess is that you have 5 minutes before the morons break in and start chewing your skulls. Do you want my help or not?
You're insane, replied the prince.
Agreed. And if we get these 12 cocoons to safety, will you get me to Nagash?
There was another blow at the door, and it gave a low groan as the frame started to give.
Brace it!
Cried Lord Auron, waving more of his men towards it.
Jam your scythes against the metal!
Gotrek was still standing in front of the prince, waiting for an answer. Volant winced and staggered. Knights rushed to help him, but he shrugged them off. He frowned at Gotrek, as though struggling to make him out in the dazzling light.
You are peculiar. Quite unlike anyone I have ever met.
Gotrek shrugged. The door shook again, and the soldiers cried out as they tried to hold back the weight.
How could you get the unburied to the capital?
Asked the prince.
Lord Auron says it would take weeks to break those machines.
Gotrek turned to Lord Auron.
Are these doors the only way out?
There's another exit, but it only leads to the Eventide. The chambers at the rear of the hall join with the city walls, and then there's nothing there but Dead Sea and the Spindrift.
The Spindrift?
An ether ship. The transportation used by the forefathers when they built the prominence, before they made the wines.
An airship?
Gotrek shook his head.
Why in the blazes aren't you using it?
It's a useless relic, replied Auron. Powered the same way as those.
He waved his scythe at the machines overhead. Gotrek looked over at Trakos. The Stormcast Eternal was helping Auron's men as they struggled to hold the door.
Right,
he said, turning back to the prince.
If I rescue your corpse sacks, you'll help me reach Nagash. Agreed?
Prince Volant sneered and seemed about to dismiss Gotrek again, but the Slayer's tone was so confident that he hesitated.
He has a habit of surprising people, said Malyneth, and he's tediously honest. If he says he can do it, he probably can.
How?
Asked the prince, his expression a mixture of outrage and intrigue.
Tell them, Manly,
Gotrek called over to the Stormcast Eternal. Trakos was not following the conversation. He was staring at the mechanical doors, muttering to himself.
Trakos!
Shouted Malyneth. He looked over. As usual, his face was hidden behind his helmet's gleaming death mask, and it was hard to know what he was thinking. Gotrek waved him over.
The moth people want their corpses back. They need them out of those machines.
He gestured with his axe at the ceiling.
Duardin engineering. Shouldn't be hard to untangle.
Trakos stared at the Slayer in silence, as though he had forgotten who Gotrek was. Malyneth felt like jamming knives into his helmet. The prince waved a dismissive hand.
Oh, these people are ridiculous.
He turned away.
Auron, get some of your archers up on those balconies fast.
A low rumbling started in Gotrek's chest, and he stood up to his full, if not very impressive, height. He gripped his great axe, and Malyneth saw quite clearly what was coming next. The prince was about to find out what happened to pompous nobles who refused to take Gotrek seriously.
They're like the engines in Azir,
said Trakos, talking to the ceiling.
In the Sigmarabulum, in the alchemical forges. Those machines were designed almost entirely by Duardin engineering guilds. These look similar.
Malyneth looked from Trakos to Gotrek and back again, realization dawning.
You studied Duardin engineering?
Trakos was still talking to the ceiling.
Of course. Most of Azir is built on the principles of Duardin engineering. I have studied several methods of containing etheric matter. Barrow cylinders, Gromthi coils. They're no different to any other.
He shook his head and began mumbling to himself. Gotrek nodded.
Between the two of us, we could untether these cocoons.
Trakos lowered his gaze from the ceiling and stared at Gotrek.
What?
Gotrek's grin froze on his face, and he gripped his axe tighter.
I said we could release them, you tin-headed lump.
Oh, yes, perhaps. It would require an influx of etheric energy.
Trakos tapped some of the arcane devices jangling at his belt.
I should be able to trigger the correct currents.
Gotrek had just opened his mouth to say more when the doors gave way. Chapter 16. The Master Rune of Crag Blackhammer. Malineth ducked as bone and iron whistled through the air. Tree-sized fingers clawed at the doors, ripping away the frame, causing the walls to crumble. Then, as the giant ghoul backed away, hundreds of its smaller kin poured into the hall, howling and snorting, their eyes rolling with kill frenzy.
"Shield wall!"
cried Lord Auron, and the Gravesword locked together, forming a row of tightly packed shields just before the ghouls crashed into them. The knights staggered under the impact, but held their position. As one, they swiped their scythes beneath their shields, cutting the legs from the creatures. Ghouls slapped to the floor, thrashing in their own blood.
"Trakos!"
bellowed Gotrek, waving at the stairs that lined the walls.
"Get those bodies down!"
He was running as he shouted, rushing to join the battle. He vaulted a toppled column and leapt over the shield wall with a joyous howl, crashing into the heart of the ghouls. Prince Volant waved Lord Auron and Malineth over.
"Help me up!"
he called, pointing at his steed. The skeleton drake had already lowered its head in readiness, but Auron shook his head.
"Mon Prince, your wounds!"
"It's an order, Lord Auron."
Malineth scoured the hall for the other exit, cursing as she realized she might have to abandon her plans after all she had endured. They were cornered like rats. It was going to be a massacre.
"The other doors lead to the sea. There's no point trying them."
Her mistress's voice was not as sneering as usual. It sounded alarmed.
"You hurt them. Walk on those dead waters and you'll lose your mind. There's nowhere to go."
Malineth hissed in annoyance. Her mistress was right. Her only chance was that Gotrek's lunatic plan might somehow work. Trakos was still only halfway up the wall, struggling to climb because of his wounds.
"Your prince will last longer on that thing than on the floor," she muttered, glancing at Auron. "Get him on there."
Auron looked appalled that she was addressing him in such a commanding tone, but he gave a grudging nod, and between them they hauled Volant up onto his mount. The prince seemed reinvigorated to be looming over the fighting, and he raised his scythe.
"Morbium eternal!"
His steed reared beneath him, and the Gravesword roared in reply, their shield wall unbroken as they cut down row after row of ghouls. Volant's drake jerked its head forwards, jaws gaping, spewing a column of dust across the hall. It hit the ghouls with such force that it carved a path through the centre of the scrum, toppling dozens of the creatures. But as Malineth climbed some rubble for a better view, she saw that the blast was doing more than simply knocking them over. As they tried to rise, their movements grew stiff and awkward, and their flesh hardened. Within a few seconds, every ghoul that had been hit was lying cracked and lifeless on the ground. Malineth nodded, impressed, then remembered Gotrek.
"The Slayer is out there!" she cried.
"Aye!"
shouted Gotrek, climbing onto the toppled door, the head of a ghoul in one hand and his axe in the other. He raised the weapon and grinned.
"Watch out for Gotrek!"
she called to Prince Volant, pointing at the Slayer. He nodded and cried out the same command, and his steed vomited more dust in the opposite direction. Trakos was still struggling to reach the ceiling, so Malineth bounded up the steps. As she approached him, she shook her head in disbelief. The idiot was singing to himself, as though he were enjoying a moment of quiet reflection. She grabbed his arm and hauled him up the last few steps. They reached a balcony suspended just below the ceiling and were now within arm's reach of the machines. Trakos's song faltered.
"Incredible workmanship," he said,
removing his helmet and fastening it to his belt so that he could study the devices in more detail.
"We're about to die," said Malineth.
Trakos fixed her with a flat, blank stare.
"I will not die."
"Oh, well, that's all fine, then."
He continued staring at her.
"The machines, Trakos," she prompted. "Can you make them work?"
He looked back at the engines and the rows of pale, ovoid shapes they cradled. From up here, Malineth could see the 12 cocoons clearly. They were just like the one Losia carried, like oversized eggs wrapped in dusty gauze. Now that she knew what they contained, she found the sight of them revolting.
"Think of all those withered little corpses," she muttered.
Trakos shrugged.
"Gotrek won't leave without the prince, and the prince won't leave without the corpses."
There was an explosion of howls from below, as the ghouls broke through the shield wall. Knights scrambled to block the gap, but it was like trying to stem a ruptured dam. Ghouls rushed in every direction, leaping and clawing and tearing soldiers to the ground.
"Quickly!"
cried Malineth.
"Get those things out!"
Trakos turned back to the machines. He singled out a particular piece of the workings and rotated cogs with his fingers, clicking them into a new position, aligning the Duardin runes engraved into the ancient metal. Malineth laughed with relief as light shimmered through the metalwork, edging its wheels and levers. The fighting became a desperate rout. Gravesward staggered in every direction, trying to fend off claws and teeth as their shields were ripped from their grip. Gotrek whirled through the carnage, hacking, laughing and lunging.
"His rune," whispered Malineth.
Trakos was too engrossed in his work to hear. He had taken a spherical golden cage from his belt and fixed it to the cogs. The instrument was pulsing with the same light as the rest of the ceiling and making a bright ticking sound. Malineth stared at Gotrek. He was lost in the moment, fighting so ferociously that Grimnir's face was blazing in his chest. His blocky, savage features looked like they were rising from a brazier, underlit by a hellish glow.
"It will change him," she muttered.
Trakos paused.
"What?"
"The rune."
She pointed one of her knives at Gotrek.
"It's consuming him."
Trakos stared blankly at Gotrek's frenzied attacks, then went back to turning the cogs. The lights flashed brighter over the ceiling, and he nodded, taking another instrument from his belt and attaching it to the first.
"To me!"
cried Prince Voland, still clinging weakly to the back of his steed as he waved his scythe.
"Form a circle!"
His soldiers tried to cross the room towards him, but so many ghouls had crushed into the hall that many of the knights were surrounded. Lord Auron led a group of soldiers to the prince, and they formed an island of black armour in the heaving mass of grey.
"If we don't go now, it's over,"
said Malineth, leaning over Trakos, trying to understand what he was doing. Every part of the machinery was flickering, and there was a low humming emanating from the cradles holding the unburied. But Trakos shook his head and backed away, leaving his implements hanging from the cogs.
"Not enough power."
"What?"
Trakos was nearly twice as tall as Malineth, and clad in hawking sigmarite. But she reached up, grabbed his arm, and hauled him round to face her.
"You're giving up?"
She shook her head in disbelief, waving at the battle that was ending below them. The gravesward around Prince Voland were falling fast, vanishing beneath mounds of frantic ghouls.
"If we don't get these things out, we're all going to be butchered."
She pulled him close.
"You might not die, Trakos, but what will your next reforging be like? And what will be left when you come out the other side?"
He loomed over her, his voice taut.